The Cricket Podcast.
I think it should never be permitted to happen again.
That is very good.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Cricket Podcast with me, Jack Hope. Max Rowe Brown, how are you doing, Max?
Hello, yeah, very good, thank you.
Ross Legg, how are you doing, Ross?
I'm marvellous, thanks. On cloud nine after England's famous 3-0 victory over the Saffers.
And joining us as today's South African cricket correspondent, Daniel Gallen. How are you doing, Daniel?
I'm not too bad, thanks, guys. Good to be on the show again.
Good. Today on the Cricket Podcast, we'll be talking about the three-match T20 series between England and South Africa, which wrapped up about an hour ago. It was a glorious 3-0 win for the Three Lions. Then we will turn our attention to the three-match one-day series, which kicks off a little bit later this week. And I believe, Max, you have some stuff on India, which is definitely us playing to the gallery.
That is correct, yes. All our IPL fans, please stay.
Before we get into the main body of the show, though, as ever, we kick off with our slightly irreverent or irrelevant question. This week, it was sent in to us by a listener via review on iTunes. So if you want to suggest a future opening question, do it like that and give us 5 stars. The question was, if you could play cricket in any period, which would you choose and why? Ross, would you like to go first?
Yeah, so a little bit of thought into this. I think I wouldn't have liked it when they had to get the boat over to Australia. I think that's a bit too far back. But I think when commercial airlines were fine, I think like the 1970s would have been a great era to play cricket in. I reckon.
Well, when most people were amateur and you didn't make any money, amateur.
Well, I don't think it was about the money. I think it was mainly about kind of the stories that were coming out of it and being able to go and be in India, be in Australia, be in South Africa and just have unbelievably good tours. The Caribbean must have been great fun. And you're not worrying about kind of social media. You're not sitting there being branded a mercenary. You're just like, I'm a bit of a toff. I'm playing cricket for England and I'm living the lifestyle.
All right. Max, what would you say?
Well, I was originally thinking that it'd be quite nice to be around that West Indies team that just blew everyone away. But I wouldn't want to. I mean, I wouldn't want to be playing against it, so I'd have to be in the West Indies team.
The other option being
similar to what Ross was saying, which was, but not the 70s, like more like the turn of the millennium, where it was starting to get serious, but England also didn't have any, you know, like real fitness. Phil Shrapnel could play. So,
Daniel, same question for you. If you could play cricket in any era, any place, what would you choose?
I think I'd choose somewhere like the mid 1800s because I can play a leg glance poorly, but I can still play a leg glance. So I think even at my third grade level, I would walk into any side of the world and would be the best cricketer. So you know. I'm convinced that just because I've got the modern technique, I'm a better cricketer than WG Grace. So if he was tearing it up then, I would absolutely murder it.
I have often thought that it would probably be quite easy to play cricket in an era where there were no leg side fielders.
Look, there's dysentery, so you've got to combat no internet and all the shoes that they'd have to wear. But I'd be the best cricket.
Yeah.
There'd be a statue of me at Lord's.
A real and present threat of cholera. It would be brilliant.
You don't want to play these days. Really serious threat of COVID. So it's not too dissimilar.
I think Max is right. I'm going to agree with you, Max. I think the early 2000s, late 90s, even though England were terrible, one, you'd be guaranteed a game.
Yeah, that's true.
It was just starting to become serious, but it hadn't fully become serious. And three, like all those boys now, even Rob Key's got a good gig in the media. Everyone
in that class is
set for life in cricket.
I actually mainly like Max's point of being in the West Indies team. Just picturing Max in his 5-for-8 frame, just be like, yeah, Max, middle order bat.
keeping wicket, ball sailing over my head for 4 byes every...
Malcolm!
Right, boys. Ross, is there anything else we need to tell our listeners?
Yep, they need to find us and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Cricket Pod, and follow us on all podcast platforms and subscribe on iTunes.
That's correct. We should also mention, some people are probably wondering, where is Ryan Sidebottom? Because we did say he'd be on the show this week. Well, he's not going to be. Unfortunately, some things happened, events, and we're working on a new date. So he should be on in the next few weeks, but not today.
Well, fortunately, we had more than capable Daniel Gallen come in, and he's a pretty handy left armer for South Africa once upon a time, maybe.
Jeepers, I had no idea I was filling in for Ryan Sidebottom. I mean, no one told me that.
The key to showbiz, that.
It was Daniel Gallen and Ryan Sidebottom, but...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, in different parts of the show, but, you know. Things happen, don't they? Anyway, we'll take a really short break, and then we'll come back with the T20s.
South Africa have made a real mess of this. And Donald Cronin and Australia are in the final. The match has been tied. What a mix-up.
Unbelievable. How on earth did South Africa make a mess of that?
Batsy had been given a message of 229.
Yes, let's kick off by talking about the T20 series between England and South Africa. Daniel, commiserations, 3-0, bit of a humping. kind of your initial thoughts just on the overall bit? Were you comprehensively outplayed, or was it just a case of England being a bit too good in the end?
I mean, this England side is, and I don't mean this, I don't mean to sound like I'm veering into hyperbole, but I genuinely believe that this England white ball team is one of the best sports teams that I've ever seen. Their batting is just marvelous. They treat the fall of a wicket like a drunk driver treats a pothole. They just keep going. It's remarkable. Every one of them, Johnny Bairstow, I think, after the first match said you can put all the names in a hat, toss them in the air, and wherever they land in the top six, that'll probably win you a tournament. And I think that's probably true. They're just fantastic. I mean, if Barcelona played Everton in three games and lost all three of them, that doesn't necessarily mean that Everton are a hopeless football club and we got to sack the manager and sack the coach, you know, and sack the players. They were just outplayed. You know, I can't really fault South Africa too much. They're just up against a team that is so far beyond them at the minute. So, you know, credit to England.
Well, let's start there. So let's start with the South Africa bit there. Initially, they've obviously got some COVID cases. So I think it was Dave Miller and Filikwayo who were ruled out.
Well, yeah, and that really impacted the balance. I mean, those are two batsmen that you would bank towards the back end of the innings to clear the ropes a bit easier than some of the other guys. We saw Piet van Biljoen and Linda having to carry the side, and Klaassen having to carry side in the first match. Klaassen again got a shot in the second game, and you know, Rusty and Fuff came good in this third match. But Petlakwai and Miller add a bit more firepower, so it was a shame to lose them both. Obviously, Petlakwai also adds the all-round option. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so those were two cases that, you know, if anyone was going to get COVID, you probably didn't want those two guys. But no excuse. You know, I don't think those two come into the side and make England and make South Africa win any game in the series, if I'm honest. Yeah.
You mentioned George Linda there. What did you make of his three games for South Africa?
Very impressed. I think if there is one great shining light from the series, is what a fine George Linda has become. I mean, we all know that if you can get an over a spin in the power play without too many runs going, that's a huge bonus. He showed what I mean, I knew he could bat, but I didn't actually realize how good a batsman he was. I mean, I haven't been covering domestic cricket in South Africa for some time. I've just been seeing the scores. Mm-hmm. So seeing him step up into the international arena and do so well, that was very impressive. No, big fan of George Linda. And, you know, it's early days, but he kind of looks a banker now for the World Cup squad, which for a guy who's only played three games, that's quite remarkable.
It's not too bad. Pretty good. Half a little entree. Should we go back chronologically through the games and talk about them in a little bit more detail? So game one back, what was that, Friday evening, the first international cricket for a while, the first international cricket for ages for South Africa. South Africa batted first and managed, after a little bit of profligate bowling, chiefly from Tom Curran, I'm afraid, Max, to score 179, which looked like it might be enough going into the second innings, especially as South Africa took early wickets. And we all know the rule that if you have if you've taken three wickets by the end of the power play, you're, you know, what do you win, 80% of those T20s? Well, South Africa had managed that. Unfortunately, they hadn't dislodged Johnny Bairstow, and sort of as testament to what you were just saying, Daniel, England's batting really is scary.
Is the residual 20% in that stat the times when you come up against Milan, Bairstow and Butler? Stokes.
Yeah.
And Morgan.
From that point on, from the end of the power play, it really became the Bairstow show. And I think there have been some good innings in this series, mainly from England batsmen. But Rassie van der Dusen was good today. That Bairstow knock, given the circumstances, maybe not the best pitch of the series, was fantastic. Daniel, do you think South Africa let that game slip, or was Bairstow just a little bit too good on the day?
See, I'm reluctant to be overcritical of South Africa because of how good England are, and Bairstow played an absolute gem of the innings, but... you know, that's kind of no good for the narrative of a podcast. So let's try and do a little...
We must so let's try and blame.
Yeah. Well, and let's try and do that. I mean, Bjørn Hendricks had a bit of a nightmare, didn't he? He's a good bowler. He's a bowler who understands the conditions. He's a swing bowler, so you know he likes to get it up there, but he just kind of offered a bit too many hit me balls to Bairstow, didn't he? Obviously, he kind of chucked a few down wide that ran away for five runs. I didn't think Ngidi was as good as he could have been. You know, he's developed into he emerged on the scene as a bit of a strike bowler, big scary fast guy. But he's now developed a few cutters. I don't think he's quite nailed them at the international level. So yes, South Africa did let it get away. I mean, you know, Quinton de Kock obviously had a mare. If you tossing the ball to Heinrich Claassen, who's a wicketkeeper, and his over went for 14 runs. So clearly something didn't go according to plan. So yes, South Africa did let them off the hook, but I don't think South Africa were terrible. I think, but again, against this England side, you have to be at your best, and South Africa weren't.
Yeah, I mean, you almost need a couple of people to have career days if you're gonna overturn them. Max, one for you, because I know you are a huge fan of Johnny Bairstow. One, how good, I don't know if you can say anything about how good Bairstow was. Two, were you surprised to see this innings propel him back into Test match contention?
It was a very good inning. I mean, there's not much you can say interesting, really, is there, apart from, yeah, it was a really good innings and he basically won the game. As for the Test match, yeah, well, it's not the first time we've seen an England wicketkeeper get into the Test team on the back of T20 form, so I guess I can't be entirely surprised.
Well, to be fair, Johnny Bairstow's main issue is that he misses balls that swing and they hit his stumps. In Sri Lanka, doesn't really swing that much, so maybe they're kind of thinking we could work out.
That's true. Good point, Ross.
Did you also see the little thing that happened with the warm-up game where Bairstow got clean bowled by Ollie Stone and then it mysteriously disappeared from the internet and the scorecard? He batted and got out and then came into bat at the end of the innings again in the T20 warm-up.
Oh,
where,
I did
where
see
the
this,
team Butler
yeah.
won. And after he'd been out and the ECB released a clip of Ollie Stone demolishing his stumps and Bairstow missing yet another straight one, it mysteriously disappeared. And then when he came back into bat at the end of the game, it also disappeared from the scorecard because I don't think the scorecard would let Bairstow be in there twice.
Well, there we are. Conspiracies all round. ECB HQ. That was game one. Ross, any final thoughts? Would you like to sum it up?
Well, I just think it's an overall point for the series, and you touched upon it a little bit, Daniel, around Hendricks. And I think if South Africa are going to have a good bowling lineup, they seem to have got a good couple of spinners in Shamsi and Linda. They need their paces to help control and not go all over the place. It seemed in that first game they had a plan. And they were bowling quite well. They were bowling into the pitch. England was struggling to get it away. And then Hendricks just decided to play a completely different game. Like he was starting to pitch up, couldn't execute his Yorkers. And was it 28 off the over? And South Africa the game. So, it was probably a good decision to drop him.
Well, I feel for him. You know, one bad game doesn't make a bad player. But, you know, unfortunately at this level, that is probably him. I'd be surprised if... if we see him over the summer in South Africa playing T20 cricket, and you know, it's incredible how one over could kind of see him out of the World Cup contention. I feel for him because I am a fan of him. He plays for the Lions, which is the team that I support back in South Africa. But yeah, it was a bit of a horror show.
Well, is it because if he's a left armer, so actually the stats are kind of in his favour a little bit, so it might not be kind of the end of the road for him. So that could...
But and it's a good point you make about bowling into the pitch. He just doesn't quite seem to have that confidence that he can do, because it is difficult. You know, we saw how, you know, guys like Archer and Jordan, quite experienced guys, bowling those slow balls into the pitch, you know, known for their pace, obviously, but having that variation. Hendricks just kind of seemed to lack that confidence as he was running in to really get it into the pitch. When he did try and do it, it almost floated it up. Mm-hmm. And it was a bit telegraphed, so, well, you know, one for the drawing board.
I've heard Liam Plunkett's looking for a new country to play for, so if you need a player, call him.
Yeah. We'll take him. Yeah. We'll take him.
Game two over in Parl. I tell you what, let's just take a moment to... I'd like to know from you four, or you three. Parl or Newlands, which ground has the best backdrop? Because this was stunning vistas all around that stadium. Ross, what do you think?
Well, I think every time I turn on the TV to watch the cricket in South Africa, I'm just like, I want to go there. Like, there's no bit apart from it. I'm just like, people get to play cricket there. It's unbelievable. I think Parl looked quite nice, and I quite liked this. Was it a university ground? I think they were saying that Nasser Hussein played for a university there or something. It looks gorgeous, but I mean, Cape Town and Newlands, just the back, especially tonight, there was quite a low clouds. It kind of looked like it was almost a scene out of Jurassic Park.
Very good. Max, quickly, one word, Newlands or Boland Park?
Well, I was going to go with Parl because of the building site.
Yeah, that's a good point. And Daniel, have you been to both in person?
I've covered a few games at Newlands. I haven't actually covered a game at Parl, but it's wine country, so I have been there quite a few times. It's the whole of the Western Cape province is just gorgeous. So if anyone listening to this gets a chance to go when COVID restrictions and blah, 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 when you are allowed to go, I highly recommend going to the Western Cape. It's a stunning part of the world.
Cricket anyway,
back
on tour.
Back to last Sunday, yeah. We'll return from the travel segment to the second T20. South Africa batted first once again. They batted first in all three matches in this series. In the second, it's probably the least impressive performance, I thought. It was a fairly ponderous innings. They were quite significantly tied down by Adil Rashid. And Jofra Archer only conceded 18 runs off his four overs, bowling two in the power play and two at the death, I think. South Africa ended on 146. And despite a spirited bowling performance, it wasn't quite enough. Max, this time, David? We're not really sure about that, but I don't know if anyone can enlighten us. He stabilised a reasonably iffy innings. Do you think that finally answers the last Milan doubters?
I mean, if it doesn't, then I don't know what they're drinking, because I mean, he's just... The stats back it, and then he just carries on and does it as well. Right? What more evidence do you need?
I don't know what more evidence they need. I was asking you.
Well, I'm sorry. You can't reason with madmen, can you?
No.
Well, there's a bit, right? They said he kind of starts slowly. He chews up a lot of balls, and actually, like, his dot ball percentage, blah, blah, blah. It makes the guy's got a strike today, hit what, 99? I know we'll come on to that game. Strike rate of over 200, and they're criticising him. He's a slow starter.
Well, it's one of those things where it's quite easy to write the narrative, rewrite the narrative at the end of the game. Like with David Milan in that game on Sunday, if he'd got out at the point where he was 20 of 24, then you're going, oh, he's done what we always, you know, moan at KL Rahul and Virat Kohli for doing, chewing up too many balls and losing the game. But then in the next 10 deliveries, he goes and scores another 20 runs and wins the game for England. So it's fine margins, it can be, but he's got a plan and it worked, so... Yeah. Got back him.
Daniel, a question for you. I mean, Adil Rashid did seem to cause quite a lot of problems bowling in the middle overs for England. Is that a South African issue, leg spin, or is it that Adil Rashid is just one of the best bowlers in the world?
Well, again, I'm going to sit on the fence and say both. Facing spin has been a perennial problem for South Africa. I think a lot of these batsmen still have nightmares of facing Chahal and Kuldeep Yadav. Is it Kuldeep Yadav?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. last time India were in town in South Africa when Aidan Markram was skippering, all sorts of problems. I mean, captaining that side is probably why Aidan Markram is not involved in this white ball team anymore, the nightmares they gave him. So, yeah, you know, South Africa and spin, it's a tale as old as time, but Rashid is just marvelous. And I was commentating during that game, and I put it out there to my co-commentators, like, is Adil Rashid the best leg spinner in the world? And people said Rashid Khan and a couple of the Indian fellas, but man, this guy's got to be up there. His variation is unpickable. His confidence to keep flighting the ball, even when he is hit, just shows the gumption that the guy's got. Very, very impressive. I mean, on South Africa on this match, probably the best bowling performance they put in. Yes, it was a helpful wicket, but you know, again, South Africa just couldn't quite put it together with a really poor batting performance. But a lot is made of England's batting. But I thought their bowling in the second match was really, really good. You've mentioned Archer's figures and Rashid, but I thought Curran was really good. Tom, that is. I thought Jordan offered a lot. Stokes went for 7, but when he came on, he kept things tight as the sixth bowler. So, yeah, again, South Africa just kind of second best and always going to be.
Yeah, I mean, Rashid really. What I think amazes me is the amount of dip he gets on the ball. So even when the ball gets flighted up, it always seems to be about a meter shorter than the batter thing.
Was it Hendricks?
The one that he got Faf.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that one, Faf was... I mean, Faf is maybe coming to the end of his career, but has been a high-quality performer for, what, a decade-ish? He missed it by quite a long way and was miles out of his crease. And he did that thing. You don't really see it an awful lot in, professional cricket, but he did that sort of thing with his hands where he fenced at it and completely, like, one hand off the bat. Groping, I think, is the word that they use. Really, really stitched up by Rashid there. Ross, one for you. You're a big fan of Jason Roy. He didn't succeed again today, but I think Sunday's match was when he looked most ugly in the series.
Yeah.
What's next on the Jason Roy journey?
Well, I think in his England form for about a year, especially in the ODIs, I think he averaged about 13 or something in ODI cricket. And he did a little bit better in some of the T20s, but I think he's just one of those people who, when he's out of form, he's always going to look bad. Because he's a power hitter. That's what he is. So he's always going to go with the strong hands. He's always going to try and hit that ball. So it's going to look a bit unwieldy. But the same people who are criticising him now, saying that, oh, he's looks at so bad, are also the same people going, oh my God, this guy's absolutely amazing. How has he done that? So I think it's a little bit hypocritical. And I think he's got plenty of credit in the bank for England. I think a big part of it as well is when it comes to playing at the World Cup, he absolutely dismantled Australia in that ODI semi-final, probably the biggest game of his career, and he's come back from injury. They've talked about the pressure that was on him to get that England team up and running, because England could have definitely thrown that away. It would have not been a classic England thing to do, but Jason Roy set that tone, and I think he's going to ride on that for quite a while. And I think if it's not Jason Roy at the top of the order, it's Bairstow, but even then, I'm not sure they're going to disrupt this top six now.
Yeah, he's had an unfortunate year as well, because he came into it, well, sort of injured essentially, and went into the England team having, against Ireland in that series, having played virtually no cricket.
Yeah.
And he looked like a man who'd played virtually no cricket. And unfortunately, this isn't a year where, if you've been out for a while, you're going to get a lot of games to get back into nick. So I think he just needs a
have
run.
Have you, I don't know if anyone here heard Steve Smith talking this week saying he found his hands in reference to, so obviously he hit a couple of centuries against India. And we'll talk
where
about
on earth
that in a
were
bit.
They?
But he said, yeah, well, he had an iffy IPL, and he said he was in the nets and he found his hands. I don't know what that means. And then he went out and scored all these runs. And I wonder whether something similar maybe applies to Jason Roy, because I don't think you would say that either of them, I mean, Steve Smith maybe slightly more pronounced his unorthodoxy, but where Jason Roy strikes the ball, and this was a thing in the Ashes last year, I think you'll remember, he strikes the ball a long way in front of the crease, like meters down the wicket sometimes, and I mean, obviously the traditional way to play cricket is to have your hands under your head, and he's doing something quite unorthodox in that way. And I wonder whether he, like Max, you sort of alluded to it there, he just hasn't played enough cricket to, as Steve Smith
find
would say,
hands.
Find his hands. Yeah. Anyway, that was game two. It meant England went into game three with an unassailable 2-0 advantage.
Perfect opportunity to put some new faces into the team, right?
Yes, you did. You did,
yeah,
sort of think that.
Yeah.
I think between all 22 players, was there one change, and that was forced, as Rabada had an abdominal strain and was replaced by Luto Sipamla. It was, an interesting game. So having just finished watching it, I don't know if I've completely digested it, but it feels like England absolutely battered South Africa. But then thinking back maybe sort of 2.5 hours ago now, 3 hours ago now, we were talking in the Cricket Podcast WhatsApp chat about how England are bowled incredibly poorly and they might be behind the eight ball slightly in this one. Max, I'm going to pick you because I'm looking at you. Can you explain whether 190-odd was under par, whether England batted really well or whether both teams batted really well?
I think it probably looked like the pitch was better than maybe people had thought. And I think it's possible that blast at the end from Van der Dusen and Pfaff maybe gave the England batsmen a bit of confidence to go out and think, actually, you know what, we can attack this game from the off. But I also think that maybe 192 is at least par or slightly above against most other teams in the world. And then, David Milan and Jos Buttler just did their thing. Mm-hmm. And it was, probably also, you can look at Sipamla and say like maybe the nerves got to him and he had a bit of a stinker. But he wasn't the only one who got treatment. I think it was only really Norkia who looked particularly dangerous and kept things vaguely tight. So I think sometimes you just have to take your hat off, don't you?
Daniel, when Rassi and Pfaff were batting, were you confident? You were just like, do you know what? Actually, these two have got it, because the sound off of Rassi's bat was unbelievable. It was sexual chocolate, to put it in.
I didn't know he could do that.
Huh?
I didn't know he could do that. It was quite an out of character innings, I thought, from what I've seen anyway.
Well, that's interesting you say that, because this is kind of the innings that Rassi Finadison has promised in T20 cricket. People have been watching his progress throughout the last year or so since he made his international debut. Has known what a talent he is. He's a late bloomer on the international scene. He made his international debut at 30. But he was the second highest run scorer in the World Cup last year after Pfaff. So he is a hell of a batsman, but he just quite hasn't been able to make a click in the shortest format. He's almost like Milan in that sense, where he requires a few more balls to get himself set. He's more of a number three than a number five in T20 cricket, but he played a remarkable. It's the way he took on Jofra Archer. I mean, you don't often see anyone do that to Jofra Archer. And you saw how Joff was throwing his hands in the air. He had a misfield in the last couple of overs, no doubt still thinking about the way Rassi picked him up and put him over Cal Corner. So, no, a hell of a knock. To answer your question, I'm never confident when England still have to chase a score. You never know what enough is going to be. Had they dragged it over to the psychological barrier of 200, maybe I would have felt more confident. Look, when Linda started off with what was his first, what did his first over go?
I think it was just one, wasn't it?
One. I think it was just one. Two, yeah. Overs.
That's right. Then I was starting to feel a little confident. But, you know, once Malone and Buttler got going, it kind of looked inevitable, really. And, you know, you asked the question, Jack, did England batter South Africa? Well, they did, right? They chased like 191 with 9 wickets in hand with, a few overs to spare. It was that's pretty comprehensive. And it just shows you how strong this England side is. They just never out of it. They just refuse to get beat.
They battered South Africa and it wasn't really South Africa's fault.
No, exactly. I feel for the guys. I really do, because, it's, you know, they're looking around like, this is the best batting performance we've put in against the white ball for a long, long time. Yeah, we bat Australia, but we always bat Australia in meaningless one day as in T20 series. We swat them aside, no problem. So this was a hell of a batting performance. I mean, Rusty and Fife walked off there, and I haven't seen smiles on their face like that for a long, long time. And for Butler and Milan to do what they did, it just feels like the bully at the beach just kicking over your sandcastle. It really felt brutal.
So coming back to the South African batting lineup, so they've got some good players in there who impressed at the IPL in De Kock and Faf. Rassie batted really well. Bavuma can hold the bat. He's a good batsman. But there's just something about it just a bit frail. Like Reeza Hendricks is not an international standard number three in T20 cricket.
Well, not in T20. In 50 overs, yes, but I would agree with you, not in T20s. I would actually like to see Rassie come in at three, which kind of, you know, ticks both those boxes that I was talking about. Faf at four, and then Miller five, Pietlakwayo at six. You know, that's kind of a side that I like to see. I might be in the minority. People listening to this might not think that Pietlakwayo is a T20 international number six. I would like to think that he is. I'm also not completely sold on Miller, but looking around, he kind of has the firepower that no one else has when he's firing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, unfortunately, Reeza was given the opportunity. I think that's what these last two matches were for, to see if he could kind of hang with the big boys. He clearly couldn't. That's no plight on him. Mm-hmm. I think he's got a future in international cricket with the 50-over side. But no, I would agree with you. T20 cricket, and he's bad.
Well, he did that thing that Mitch Marsh did when England played against Australia earlier in the year, when he just could not pick Adil Rashid at all. He literally was laughing at himself. Like, I don't know what's happening here.
That was a tough watch, wasn't it? That was quite hard to see.
Chances, so this is the first time we're obviously going to ask about AB de Villiers. Is he going to come back? I mean, surely every cricket fan in the world is going, he's got to come back. But it must be a question that's asked every single time you get onto Guerrilla Cricket, a podcast, writing an article, whatever it might be.
Well, look, it's that or Colpax, right?
we know how boring Colpax are. So.
Yeah, exactly. Don't get me started. I don't want to put anyone to sleep. look, AB de Villiers walks into any, maybe even this England side, AB de Villiers walks into any batting lineup in the world still. You know, after all these years out of international, well, it's not that long. It's
3 years
year and a half. But it was a 3 years.
I think 2017's last game. Maybe
2018, the test series against Australia. So whenever that, March 2018, I think was his last international match. He certainly walks into the South African units. He makes them a handy team to a team that could on their day win a World Cup. Mm. You know, it's a good bowling lineup. I know they haven't bowled very well today, but it's a good bowling lineup. Rabada makes them world class. You put AB de Villiers alongside Quinton de Kock, Faf du Plessis, and that is a handy top
really,
five.
Really good.
But what does he do off the field? What does he do for the psychology of the side? Does he? If you're a guy like Rassie van der Dussen, for example, you know, because you must understand that South Africa also has selection targets along racial lines. AB de Villiers is a white dude. He walks in, another white dude has to make way. Right. So who is it? Is it, if you're Rassie van der Dussen, as the talk was in the last World Cup, if AB made that World Cup squad, it was probably going to be Rassie to make way. How do you feel if you're Rassie? How do you feel if you're the coach who's banked on Rassie? How do you feel if you're the captain who's put all your faith in Rassie? You know, there's so many dominoes that kind of fall out from just taking the superstar and plonking him in the middle of a unit that, yes, it is not as good as it could potentially be with him. But that is settled, that has established their own identity, that has moved on from the saga. And let's not forget that AB de Villiers wasn't dropped. He walked away from the side when he was still wanted. So I think the psychological impact is far greater than the on-field impact he has. Look, that's easy to say. If these guys were robots, I'd have him in a heartbeat, but they're not. And we've seen in previous South African World Cups how squad culture can impact on-field performance. So if it was up to me, and it might be controversial, but no, I wouldn't have him, unfortunately. And I say that through gritted teeth.
Yeah. We should move on to the ODIs reasonably soon, and we'll take a quick break in a second. Before we do, though, obviously, these T20s have happened in the context of a T20 World Cup coming up next year. And from an England perspective, I still don't think we know what the best 11 is. I think maybe some questions about the batting were answered in this, in that you just pick them all and tell them all to go for it. but bowling wise, England didn't bowl that well probably in two of the three games. is, what are the answers there? Is it Mark Wood and Moeen Ali? Is Parkinson the answer? Matt, what did you think of what we said?
Because we only saw one bowling lineup, and that was the thing that completely baffled me, especially tonight, is that your captain's gone into the series saying we don't know our best team, and then picked the same team three times in a row. And like, continuity is great, but when you're on, not the eve, but you know, you're very close to a World Cup on the horizon, and you need to sort out what you think your best team is. It's a bit odd that they didn't make a few changes, but I think spinner would be useful.
Was it maybe a trial run for the two Curran brothers? As in, you're going to get three matches here to show us whether you can do it.
Yeah, that's possible, and I don't know if either of them have done enough to warrant a place in the side. But I would be interested in testing an extra spinner, especially when you have Stokes in there who could bowl a couple of overs of pace if you need him to.
Oh, he bowled four today, and he actually looked all right.
Yeah.
I think you have to manage Stokes overs, because they do have the potential to go wildly off the rails.
Don't get him to bowl the last one in the final. That would be my advice.
Yeah. Ross, you get the last word on this, and then we will take a quick break. What did we learn?
Well, I think I'm not entirely convinced that, and this is going to get me pelters. I've insulted Dhoni before, insulted Cody before. I'm now going after Owen Morgan. I don't think he's T20 captain.
Can we cut him? Can we just cut him there?
The guy is a brilliant 50-over captain, but T20, it even rattles Iceman. And what I find interesting is that he's got that selection loyalty that you've got. I think I agree with you guys that this was pretty much a dead rubber. We should have trialled some other people, but I can understand the selection loyalty. But today's game, it looked like they had no plan in the last 10 overs, and it was either the bowling unit completely didn't execute the plan, or they just couldn't get their field right. And I think that's the bit where you saw in the IPL with Kolkata Knight Riders, Morgan just kept on making almost the wrong decision here and there. So I think there's a bit of a journey to go on with his captaincy in the T20 game, and there's no reason why it's not going to get better. There's another IPL in, what, March time, April time? I'm sure he'll have another go at that, and I'm sure he'll be captain again. But there's just some questions I've got around that, and I'm just still a little bit on the fence on whether it's the right one.
So your solution is drop Owen Morgan?
No, it's not at all. It's not at all. I just think there's that bit. If you were going to pick something that can be improved, you've talked about the bowling. The batting's incredible.
Maybe Ross, they did bolt a plan. Maybe the plan was to give England a massive target to chase and see if they could do it.
Well, this was the thing, Max.
I actually wouldn't put it past.
Right, hold on. Right, I'm gonna say we're gonna take a break now, because I know where you're going with this, and we'll be talking for ages. So we're gonna have a little break. We're gonna come back with the one ODIs, and then we can talk about signs on balconies as much as you want in a minute.
We love hearing from our listeners, so please follow us at The Cricket Pod on Twitter and Instagram. Or if you have a great story like Scotty G did about the Hayden Way, Matthew Hayden's personal website, we want to hear about it. So from wherever you're from, send us in a great story and we'll read out on the show. Email us on thecricketpod@gmail.com. Thank you very much.
So after those three T20 internationals, we are moving on to three one-day internationals, starting, I think, Friday, the first game of those. A question for you, Daniel, first up. Do you think there is likely to be a different scoreline in this series to the one we've just seen?
Yes, I think England will win the series, but I think South Africa will win a game. I think the longer... Look, I know I say this after England have just beaten South Africa 3-1 in a four-match test series in their own patch, but I think the longer the format, it actually brings South Africa into the game a little more, and that might sound counterintuitive, but I think the longer the batsmen have to settle themselves, the more bowlers have the chance to get into a rhythm, I think the more confidence the South Africans have. Of course, we could come up against the England side that puts on 450 on their day, but I think Debraz Shamsi is very much a rhythm bowler. We've spoken about Rassie van der Dussen and Reeza Hendricks and Heinrich Claassen, batters who, at Tembo Bavuma even, batters who like to kind of settle into their groove. So I actually think South Africa might be a better 50-over team than they are a 20-over team. If they do win a game, I think England will have to have a bit of an off day. But I'd like to be positive and say that South Africa will come out victorious in at least one game.
That's good. I thought it'd be helped slightly because England are sending three of their potential starting 11 home. So Archer, who definitely plays going home, Stokes, who would definitely play is going home, and Sam Curran, who would probably play one of the games at least, also being sent home for a rest before Christmas. One of the questions I've got, and I think England are slightly in the doldrums with the 50-over team, in that they're not really sure who'll be around for the next World Cup, and they're not really sure what problems they're trying to solve at this point. Daniel, similarly for South Africa, what are this 50-over team working towards? I mean, the next World Cup's, 3 years away? Can you answer that?
Well, I'd be surprised if Faf du Plessis plays. He's 36. You know, what would be the point of playing him? I'd like to see young Carl Verein come into the side. I'm not sure if the listeners will be aware of him. He's 23 years old. He's a wicketkeeper batsman. Some have even earmarked him as a guy who could take the gloves in the test side and have Quinton de Kock bat in the top four, captain the side. And he won't be captain now, will he? That he's relinquished it or been taken away. But Carl Verein, a very, very impressive batsman. I wouldn't like to see Piet van Biljon. I like the guy, but I don't think he's necessarily the future. Yanaman Malan, another youngster, 24 years old, top order batsman, hits the ball. He just murders the ball. I was actually quite surprised to see him not playing this T20 side. In fact, one wonders why he didn't. It's hard, really. I mean, like, you almost have to ask the question, why are they even playing 50 over cricket now with two T20 World Cups on the horizon? I don't quite get the point of it. Are fans like, you know, there's a Yiddish word, chalishing, you know, people, when you're desperate for something, are fans chalishing for 50 over cricket? I mean, I honestly couldn't care less about it. Just have another three T20s as far as I'm concerned. But here we are. I'd like to see people get a go, essentially, kind of like England are. But what I like about England is that they've put their cards on the table and said, we're going to pull these three senior players. That kind of forces our hand to play some guys who you might not be familiar with. I'd like to see Mark Boucher do the same and say, these three guys, we know they're bankers for the T20 World Cup. We're not playing them. And now we're going to give these guys a go. So that's kind of what I see. And I would rather the likes of Verein, you know, other youngsters, Smuts, Glenton Sturman, for example. I'd like to see these guys get a game and lose all three games, then Faf du Plessis, for example, play all and they win all, because what does that teach us?
It'd be a great statement, wouldn't it, as well, around kind of Boucher's reign at the top of the team, and also for Cricket South Africa to turn around and say, look, we are actually changing the way we've done things a little bit here.
But the challenge with that is Boucher's kind of under pressure now. He's just lost the series 3-0. He instructed his team not to take the knee for Black Lives Matter, so he's lost the cultural war in a way. He's come in, you know, with big energy and said he's going to clean up house and he's going to get things back to where they should. But he's lost a test series against England. He's now just been battered in a T20 series with the World Cup on the horizon. I think he'll be feeling pressure to actually get a series win, even if it is in a meaningless 50-over tournament against England. So there might be that double tug there of the desire to blood youngsters, but also the pressure of actually getting a win under his belt.
Yeah, fair enough.
So we'll have to see.
Fellas, should we do some predictions on why we think things will happen? And then, Ross, we can talk about your signals. Max, in this three-match ODI series, who will win? What will the score be and why?
Well, I think I'm going to have to very boringly, I'm afraid, agree with Dan and say it'll be
fence sitter.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think England will win it, but I do think South Africa will win a game because England do have that sort of they have that fragility that you will see them put in a dodgy performance in a one-day game from time to time, and without a couple of those players like, you know, Archer and Stokes to dig you out of a hole, it makes it more likely that wobble will result in a defeat. But I think what I'm most looking forward to seeing is some new faces. I'd like to see Ollie Stone get a run out. I reckon he probably will, because Archer's gone and I don't think Wood's going to be able to play two games as England's pace man. So hopefully we'll get to see some of that.
He's not going to Bastogne and getting blown the hell. He's playing a 50 over game, Max. He's obviously going to play all three games. At least
it's Mark Wood's ankle, Ross. It won't work.
He's been He's played, what, test matches and come through that fine and continued playing. I think it's madness if you think he's going to break down after one game.
Yeah, well, that it's a rogue choice. Ross,
I think he needs to be managed, though. I mean, like, he comes through the test games, but he gets managed. He gets managed better than Joffre Archer, who just gets...
He's not some ridiculously brittle car that some old man keeps in a garage and drives him once a year to make sure the battery's still fucking working. It's a ridiculous suggestion.
I mean, have you forgotten all of the ankle injuries that he's had? I mean, I know he's amended his run-up, and that's made a huge difference, but...
He bowled 100 overs at the World Cup, didn't he? Come on.
We'll see.
Ross, what do you think the score will be and why?
It'll be 3-0.
And let's use Max's sort of... Max threw in who he's excited to see. Who are you excited to see?
It'll be 3-0.
Sam Billings?
Well, Sam Billings has proved his worth, hasn't he? Ever since I wrote him off of being just like, what is this guy trying to achieve? And then actually, I think from that day, he pulled out, three great performances in the ODIs against Australia. It would be good to see him do well. He'll probably take Stokes' spot, I'm guessing, in kind of the batting. I would be surprised if Moeen Ali doesn't play. And we also have to think here that no one on that... I think it'd be pretty hypocritical of the England setup to say that, mental health is kind of our number one priority of all of our players. Send some players home and then keep players on the bench. I think everybody in that squad that they've taken is going to at least get one game. So I would be surprised if that didn't happen. It would have been nice to see another spinner tried out. I think they missed a trick in not bringing Parkinson. Everyone kind of talks about him, that he's a great leg spinner in white ball.
Still don't know what he looks like.
Yeah.
Nor do I.
We're not actually sure he exists. It's his other leg spinner.
But I concur with Daniel, just like, why are we playing 50 over cricket? I just don't understand why we're playing 50 over cricket.
So give us the score then.
Yeah, I think it'll be 3-0 England. Purely on the fact that I think they'll miss Rabada too much. I think 10 overs of Rabada makes it a completely different kind of ball game. Simpala, I think he went around the park today, but actually it's great that someone like that is getting an opportunity in the game. And Ngidi's going to play. Is Nokia going to play all three games? He's just come back from the IPL, etc.
I'd be surprised if he plays all three. In fact, again, he's another guy. Why play him? You know, why not give Brian Hendricks a confidence boost, give him 10 overs and say, go on, Brian, you take the new ball and you be our star. Doesn't matter if you get some tap. We can go around. And so, it's almost like, what is the point of even talking about this? Why are we pontificating over this?
Is Linda going to play? I mean, Shamsi's a good spinner. As you say, like 10 overs of Shamsi, that's good.
I mean, Linda's only played the three internationals, right? He's got to play. He's got to kind of maybe show that he can kind of put a spell together. He's 28 years old. You know, the next World Cup, whatever it is in 3 years' time, he's still at the peak of his powers for a spinner. So, but also Maharaj is coming back. Maybe he'll juggle it with Maharaj. I think Linda will play a couple of games, yeah.
Yeah, I really, really don't rate Maharaj.
You don't, even with the Red Bull. Yeah.
With the Red Bull, he's probably as good as they can do at the moment in terms of in Test cricket. But ODI cricket, I just think the darts have. I just don't see it working out against the England batting lineup. We'll say that, and it'll take six for. But
I think you're right. I mean, the way Ben Stokes kind of hit him for six at will in this last Test series kind of shows that he is a bit hittable.
I'm going to go with you, Ross. I think 3-0. I think Jason Roy is going to find his hand and cause all sorts of trouble. We should talk about the signals, shouldn't we? We maybe should have talked about the signals earlier. Ross, do you want to summarise what we mean by signals?
Yeah, so in the last 10 overs, when I kind of said that England didn't look like they had a plan, their head analyst...
In today's T20,
T20. And their head analyst was actually putting up letters and numbers on the balcony, kind of signalling to Owen Morgan about what we're assuming were either kind of match-ups, what the pitch was doing, whatever else. But it was kind of in-game analysis that they were doing on the computer, by the looks of things, and then relaying that live to Morgan to make decisions on. I mean, immediately when I saw it, I was just like, that's surely not allowed. Well, what are your thoughts, Daniel? Is it something that you were a bit surprised to see, or is it you surprised that it's not happening more often?
Oh, that's a good question. Kind of both, because I saw Andy Zaltzman's tweet, the statistician and TMS commentator, and he said that it's actually not illegal, which surprised me. And if it's not illegal, why are they not doing it? It's a bit triggering for me because I remember when Hansi Kronier and Bob Wilmer trialed sort of like a walkie-talkie system during the ahead of it in a warm-up game before the 99 World Cup here in England. And they got a major slap on the wrist for it and were told not to do it. And, you know, this kind of fueled the Hansi Kronier cheat narrative that unfolded later that year or the year after. So it kind of rankles a little bit. It doesn't feel like it's in the quote unquote spirit of the game. But again, you know, what is the spirit of the game? Does the ghost of Christmas past, you know, does it actually exist? I didn't like it. I saw a headline from Shield Berry, you know, legendary writer for The Telegraph, who said that cricket really tests the captain. You know, it's one of the joys of the sport, unlike football or rugby, is that the leadership responsibilities of a captain is such a key component of the narrative of the game. So you really want this individual to kind of figure it out, you know, like the proverbial chess match, to look at the board and know who and where to put these players and, you know, which bowler to bring on. If he's getting a guy from a bird's eye view and he is just providing that narrative for him, well, then, you know, what is the point? Then you can maybe drop a guy like Morgan and just, you know, I'm not saying Morgan isn't one of the top six batters in the game, in the team, but you don't need him, right? Because if he's not bringing his captaincy responsibilities, then what's the point? So I didn't like to see it. And I hope that this outcry, and we're not the only ones talking about it and upset by it. So I hope that the clamour will result in some action.
Jack, so there's also another part, isn't there, around the data that England have available to them. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, that's a really good point. So we've talked about this on the show before, but there is a relationship between, not necessarily an unhealthy relationship, but there's a relationship between CricViz, who are probably the primary data provider in global cricket, or global provider of cricket analytics in global cricket, and the ECB. And in fact, Nathan Lehman, who I think maybe provides some consultancy now, I don't think he is an analyst anymore, but he is one of the founders of CricViz. We could go into quite a lot of detail here, I think, but to try and get to the crux of the problem, the information that CricViz provide to the England team is not necessarily provided to all of England's opponents. And that creates a competitive imbalance if that information is shared in real time to affect the outcome of the match. Because then you're not really watching a sporting contest so much as a sporting contest augmented by one side's artificial intelligence. and I think, look, we don't know.
Only if it's actually intelligent, though.
Well, that's true.
If it's rubbish.
But there are some definitive things that you could share. So like maybe your matchups are wrong, that's you could have done that analysis wrong. But there's some definitive intelligence that you could share that will provide an advantage to the batting or bowling team if the other team didn't know it. Primarily here I'm talking about the state of the wicket. Now CricViz are able to basically grade the speed of the wicket, the bounce of the wicket, the spin of the wicket well and also with that information make projections that suggest what a good par score would be, for example. But even on a granular level as a captain, if you knew that the wicket was unusually bouncy or unusually fast or span an unusual amount, that is information that can affect your decision-making. And if the other team don't have access to that, I mean, obviously they'll be experiencing the game as it goes on, they will be at a competitive disadvantage. And the reality is, because of the way money is divided in international cricket, other teams won't necessarily have access to the data that CricViz produces via Hawkeye. Some of them, I don't know enough about South African cricket to know whether their level of analytics will include the full CricViz data package. Maybe, Daniel, you do. But England will definitely have opponents who aren't paying for that, may not even have an analyst, to be honest, sitting on their balcony. And I do say this, I will caveat that with one thing, that I think analytics, I'm not saying that analytics is bad in cricket, but I think it should exist pre and post-match. And analytics, the whole point of analysing cricket is to make players better at the game, which is something that I don't think anyone here is going to say they want the game to be worse, are they? And that's what analytics is for. I just think when it creates an imbalance and it creates a fairness issue, that should be addressed.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we saw it. It was an obvious example there with, yeah, assuming that's what's going on, holding things up on the balcony. But I mean, you just said that analytics maybe should exist pre and post match. But where does something sit? Like, so say, for example, the speed of the pitch between innings, you know, if your batsmen have one opinion of what the pitch looks like, and then you say to them, well, actually, it's doing this because we've got the data that tells you to do that. So you should go out and bat in this fashion. I mean, that's a very difficult thing to try and keep a lid on in terms of in-game analytics.
Well, I'm not really sure what point you're making there, Max. So maybe you need to. That might be my fault because I don't really understand the question. But I think
you were saying that analytics should pretty much exist pre and post match. But there's an edge case, isn't there, where you could feed at the change of innings, feed your bowlers or batsmen if they're going out the information that you've gained from the first innings of the pitch.
Well, yeah, I mean, that is true. But I mean, in an ideal world, I think that would be shared among the players. Like, that should be something that the players, through their judgment and experience playing the game, should be sharing with each other. Clearly, particularly in the case of a test match, people are going to go home and stuff and watch highlights and they're going to be discussing this. But I do... I don't know. I just think from a sporting perspective, that felt a little bit beyond the line. I appreciate there's a grey area here, and the line is potentially fairly broad, so you could be on the line or over the line, if you get what I mean. But it just felt a little bit egregious.
Daniel, did anything to add on that matter?
No, I think Jack makes a really good point. It kind of reminds me of that, you know, that pre-World One poem, you know, whatever happens, we have got the Maxim gun and they have not. You know, this is why Britain was able to, you know, rule Britannia and rule the waves and blah, 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 because they had machine guns and they were fighting up against, you know, tribesmen with spears. You know, it's not a contest then, is it? And I'm not equating modern cricket to, you know, colonialism. That would be a stretch, but you know what I mean. You know, we want to see a fair fight. That's one of the joys of sports. You know, the unscripted theatre of it. That no matter what turmoil is happening in South Africa and who sits in Parliament or you know which clan is controlling Downing Street, your 11 against your best 11 against our best 11. Let's have at it and may the best team win. But if you've got a team that is so well resourced like the ECB is, and we can throw in Cricket Australia and the BCCI as well, you know, then what would be the point of then playing a team like Sri Lanka or Zimbabwe? I mean, I'm old enough to remember a time when Zimbabwe wasn't a gimme. You know, Sri Lanka won a World Cup, right? The West Indies were a force in across formats, not just the odd T20 mercenary slogathon. So If it's going to come down to which team can afford the latest gizmo, that really cheapens the spectacle. And I don't think anyone's the winner, really. You know, then you are just a colonial force mowing down a whole bunch of tribesmen of spears.
Well, you just end up with things like cycling and F1, don't you?
I don't want anyone to say these comments out of context.
I think people understand. I think that probably covers that. Should we take a quick break, then we'll spend 10 minutes on India v Australia and wrap the show up. Welcome back. We are going to say goodbye to Daniel at this point, and then, don't worry, we will be talking about India. Daniel, would you like to let our listeners know where they can find you on the internet?
Yes, of course. Thank you very much. They can find me on Twitter at Daniel Gallen. That's one word. Gallen is G-A-L-L-A-N, not O-N, as most people spell it. I've also got a podcast of my own, Short_Fine_Legs. It's Short Fine Legs. I host it with an actual cricketer in South Africa, Nono Pongolo, who plays for the Lions. Yeah.
I kind of felt like a dig against us then, actually.
It is.
Actual cricketer.
I mean, we're actual cricketers too. We play the game. We're just not professional.
If that dig was thinly veiled, allow me to completely confirm with your suspicion. I completely intended that to be a dig. No, it's been great, guys. Love being on the show, and I look forward to the next one.
Cheers. Thanks, Daniel. Yeah, we look forward to having you back.
Coming. Yeah, so as well as England playing South Africa, there has been some other cricket going on. And the most, well, interesting in terms of what's going on around the series is the India trip to Australia. We'll quickly cover off the actual cricket. There's been two games so far and similar stories in each of those two games. Australia batted first, Steve Smith scored a ton, the Indian bowlers were smacked around a bit, and the batsmen never quite threatened to chase it down. And I mean, it's you're shaking your head, Jack. What's the problem?
Well, no, they were bad, weren't they, India? Basically, I mean,
yeah,
that's going to set pulses racing. But
yeah, I was going to start by saying that any Australian team can be pretty formidable at home, right? But yeah, when Finch and Smith and Warner and Labuschagne and Cummins and Hazelwood all play well, then it really does become a struggle. And from their point of view, probably only negatives would be injuries to David Warner and Marcus Stoinis. So we'll see how they recover. But yeah, the manner of the defeats has not been great from an Indian point of view. We've said it before with Virat Kohli in charge of teams, but it almost seems to have felt a bit rudderless, a bit directionless. There were some interesting choices. There was a bit of just random rotation of bowlers when things weren't going very well without a sort of clear strategy of, you know, how we're going to take a wicket. And there was also one of the odd decisions was bowling Bumrah for two overs with the new ball as if it was some sort of T20. It was not the clearest thinking.
No, I we did a tweet. We're going to report one of our own tweets on our own podcast here. And the tweet said, India have done something quite miraculous here. They have selected a team that's short of bowlers and short of batters, which is quite impressive, really, when you consider we're all coming off the back of an IPL, which was basically wall-to-wall good Indian batsmen and good Indian bowlers.
Yeah.
So to fit 11, just so strange. Like, I mean, all the things you're saying, Max, it's rudderless. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that sort of has been slightly epitomised by what's been happening around the team.
This is the real story, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is the cricket podcast. Well, cricket feast.
Before we get into that, there's actually been some interesting chatter on the airwaves among the cricket commentators, and also, according to a recent poll, 77% of Indian fans. Who think that Rohit Sharma should captain the white ball side and not Virat Kohli?
See, what I really like about that, Max, is that no one can see you on this podcast right now, but you've got strong World War II vibes still going on with your headset and speaking about, oh, I've picked up on the airwaves. You look like we've talked about codes today. We could well be sitting here breaking some kind of Enigma code on the cricket podcast.
It's all a sham.
So Rohit Sharma should be ODI captain. Is that what you're saying, Max?
That's what a lot of people are saying. It seems like a bit of a pointless thing to say at the moment because he's not actually in Australia. But, you know, in sort of general terms, like it's not
is
a bad point, is it?
Not the reason maybe why he shouldn't be the India white ball captain.
Well, that's certainly the reason why he shouldn't be the India white ball captain for this series, certainly. Well, but we're talking in general.
But let's really, I mean, this is what I think. I don't know what Rohit Sharma's doing. He's on some kind of cricket captain-based manoeuvres. But he, for people who haven't listened to all the IPL shows, Rohit Sharma hurt his hamstring with four or five IPL matches back to go. That meant that when India released the squads for these series, they left him out of the white ball squads.
Correct.
And he is in the test squads. It subsequently transpired that the hamstring injury wasn't so debilitating that he couldn't return to the Mumbai Indians team for maybe one of their group matches, the semi-final.
The last three games he played.
So he played three games there. And then upon the conclusion of the IPL, he basically declared that he wasn't available for India and has gone AWOL. They don't know where he is. I don't know whether they don't know where he is Virat Kohli basically said, I don't know where he is. He might not actually know where he is.
We can clarify it a bit.
Okay.
And So basically, yeah. So, I mean,
are you doing a celebrity spotted segment? Is that what you're about to do?
Well, yeah. Has anyone seen Rohit Sharma?
Where's Rohit? There'll be a new book out just in time for Christmas. Get it in your stocking. I mean, you're right. Basically, he played those last three games. Everyone was like, "What? You're injured? What's going on? Why aren't you in the one day team?" So I think part of it was that he thought he could manage the T20 because it's a shorter game, but that seems a bit odd. No one actually told Kohli what was going on. That's the problem. Kohli had a press conference and they asked him about Rohit Sharma and his injury and no one had told him. He had no idea. So it was all a bit confusing. What had happened is Rohit Sharma's gone to do some rehabilitation work on his hamstring at the National Cricket Academy. So he's having rehab to strengthen the hamstring to be able to play with a view to playing in the Test series because he doesn't feel fit enough to play in the one dayers. No one told Kohli, so when they asked Kohli about it, he didn't know. And the BCCI also weighed in classically to confuse things a little more by saying that the reason he hadn't gone to Australia was because he was looking after his ailing father. So just add something else into the mix that you probably didn't need to mention, just to confuse things further. But there was actually an update today on
this is really, it's
Sharma.
A great story, this, isn't it?
Yeah.
So where's Rohit? It's been much better than the actual cricket.
He is being assessed on the 11th of December, so they're gonna check him and they'll see if he can get.
That's
on the
just
plane.
10 days away.
So. We'll do
a daily podcast. Where's Rohit?
He got injured. He played anyway. Then he didn't go because he was injured. No one told Kohli, and now he's being assessed in 10 days to see whether he can get on the plane, which is great, except for one thing, which is
bubble.
That when you're flying from India to Australia, you have to quarantine for 14 days.
Well, he gets out on Christmas Day.
So it would mean he wouldn't be able to play in the first two tests if that is the case, which seems a little pointless, but they've been talking to Cricket Australia, trying to get those restrictions lifted, and Cricket Australia have asked the federal government to lift the restrictions for Rohit Sharma and Ishant as well, in case they can make
Cricket
it over
Australia
and
will,
be fit.
Cricket Australia
apparently
will literally do anything for the BCCI. Literally anything.
Well, there is actually, to be fair, there is actually provision in the Australian health guidelines that exceptions can be made as long as they behave in a sensible way or some woolly shit. So it's it should hopefully happen. But they're checking with the government to get them arrived. But there you go. There's Rohit. We've answered the question.
Daily podcasts are cancelled.
That had strong kind of whiffs of an England tour going terribly down under. That sounds like exactly the kind of shit that happened to England.
It's going to happen. They're going to get battered by Australia. Australia look a lot better than them in the matches. I mean, obviously they start at 3:30 in the morning, so I've not actually seen either of Steve Smith's 262 ball hundreds.
Imagine
scoring 262 ball hundreds against India within 48 hours.
Well, when you find your hands, Jack, anything's possible.
Interesting. So I do have two things to highlight here. One, return to form of Glenn Maxwell. Glenn Maxwell didn't hit a six in the IPL.
But he got home. Yeah, he got home to pitches he's comfortable on. And he bowled all right as well in the second game.
Mm-hmm. And then Mitchell Starc. What's happened to Mitchell Starc?
He's broken.
It's not going well for him, is it? At the
moment? I think he's following the Mitchell Johnson career trajectory. The left arm fast, so he's got to have the what's the bit at the bottom, the trough, before the peak next year when he signs off by taking 500 wickets in an Ashes series.
He needs to shave off the tash and regrow it.
Virat Kohli. I think people know that Virat Kohli and Rohit Sharma don't like each other very much, and I think there are probably a couple of other players in the India team that don't.
Is that a rivalry that's happened kind of like recently? Like they're just like, well, Rohit Sharma is kind of the biggest kind of threat to my captaincy. Or was there something like in their childhood, in like an under-14s game that Kohli never forgiven?
I don't think they all come up through the ranks together.
I reckon Rohit Sharma man-cadded Virat Kohli in club cricket.
They're all possibilities. It's strange. I mean, I think from Rohit Sharma's point of view, it's an odd career decision. because he could have been. He'd probably recently just broken back into the India Test team. He's one of, if not the first name on the team sheet, certainly batting wise for the white ball India side. And he could, if he'd had three or four good years, he'd have gone down as an all-time India great, which makes you basically
it's worth
a cricket
doing.
God.
Yeah, it's worth doing.
Maybe, you'd think it was worth doing. It seems slightly bonkers to detonate your career. But I don't know.
If you're able to play in the IPL final, which is one of the biggest games of the year, you'd think you could at least get on the plane and do your rehab in Australia. That's what I don't quite understand.
Right, on the pitch, I mean, we've mainly talked about stuff off the pitch because that's much more interesting.
Absolutely.
Is there anything else that we need to say or mention?
So the next game, I suppose, we should mention that is, this weekend, Friday, Saturday, time zones. Tomorrow, so, I don't know, time zone, it's tomorrow, I think, in the morning. And then there's some T20s, so we might get to see Washington Sundar in that, which would be exciting from an Indian point of view, one of the young stars of the IPL.
If that isn't a reason to get up in the middle of the night for our UK listeners, I don't know what is. Washington Sundar in some T20s.
Is this for our UK listeners, Jack?
We have many UK listeners who are part of the Bharat Army, I think.
Well, I suppose so, yeah.
I don't know. I imagine India will bounce back at some point. They can't lose. They can't get battered again, can they?
They'll win something. They'll have to.
Is there any other cricket going on in the world right now?
Well, the West Indies played New Zealand and lost comprehensively. That's pretty much all there is to say on that. It was an absolute drubbing. And the closest they got to winning a game was when the third one was rained off with about three overs down.
And are these T20s or the ODIs?
That was T20s, and then we have some ODIs and some tests.
So the format that West Indies are supposed to be absolutely brilliant at, and they're getting pumped by the Kiwis.
I mean, they're missing a few.
They had some problems as well with their quarantine, didn't they? Like, a couple of the players met up for a coffee or something like that, and they weren't allowed to, and I think that meant their quarantine got reset, so they might not actually have played any cricket, I reckon. They might basically have just walked out of a hotel room into an international cricket match.
Doesn't usually go well, does it? Might work for AB de Villiers.
It's been a bit of a miserable trip for the poor old West Indies, but I don't know if they've got the same bounce back ability as India, but they will probably complete the rest of the fixtures, which we can't say the same for Pakistan. I think there are. In the weird world of New Zealand quarantine breaches, they are the latest transgressors.
They currently represent over 10% of the whole country's infection rate of coronavirus.
Yeah, I don't really know if anyone knows what the next step is. I don't think they haven't flown anyone home or anything like that. So presumably they're just going to leave the Pakistani guys in their hotel room until.
Well, do you know
later.
What it is? Do you know what it is?
What is it, Ross?
It's Mushtaq Ahmed's bloody disco dinner. That's
what. Why has that called? What could that? How could that possibly have anything to do?
I reckon he set a precedent, and that's how the Pakistan cricket team eats from now on. They have to have a revolving lazy Susan that feeds everyone, and it's just caused havoc.
That's the Chris Nash episode 69. If you want to go back and listen. Two stories about Mushtaq Ahmed's revolving dance floor / Lazy Susan. With all the cricket wrapped up, fellas, is there anything else we need to mention before we close the show?
They should follow us at The Cricket Pod on Twitter and Instagram, and they should follow us on all podcast platforms and subscribe and leave us a review. If you do leave us a review, we will read it out. Have we got any to read out?
We did it at the beginning, Ross, if you were paying attention. The original, the first question. Look at the production
I'm in the actual review itself, but fair enough.
Oh, I'm not going to read out that whole review.
It was glowing. That's all you need to know.
We got a 5-star review. If you want to be the person who sets the setup question for the whole podcast, an integral part of the cricket broadcast process, leave us a review with your question in, and we'll happily do that. I do want to know. We're going off on a tangent here now. But that review was left by Meet the Legend 06. Does anyone know who Meet the Legend 06 is?
No idea, mate.
No, have we got to the bottom of it yet?
No, we haven't got to the bottom of it. Meet the Legend 06, who are you? This has been the Cricket Podcast with a very
sounds
surreal,
like a really bad ending to an episode of Scooby-Doo.
A very surreal ending to a Cricket Podcast. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.